This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the All Things Bama Podcast, powered by the Bama Central Broadcast Network.
Welcome in to the All Things Bama Podcast. I'm your host, Mason Woods, and as always, I'm joined here by my good friend, Joe Gaither. We just got done actually having a very, very fun and action-packed edition of the Joe Gaither Show, so make sure you go check it out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon, as while you are checking out this show there. We just got done talking to Bobby Humphrey and Alabama linebacker commit Zay Hall, both of them having some fun things to share with us there. So again, like I said, make sure you go check those programs out. Before we get into anything today, I want to, you know, first welcome everybody back to the show and then remind you all to follow me and Joe on the Twitter machine at MAWoods_ and at JoeGaither6. And again, like I said, make sure you follow the show. Give us a 5-star rating on whatever platform you get your podcast from, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon. On today's show, we're going to take a look at Alabama's latest quarterback commit, Taden Kawa. We're going to also wrap up SEC Media Days from last week with a few of the storylines we missed. I'm going to steal a little bit from our friend Katie Windham and take a look at which players should reach double-digit sacks this season. She took to the Bama Central website yesterday, putting out a quick little video discussing, you know, which of Alabama's edge rushers, linebackers, defensive linemen, whoever it may be, could potentially reach that double-digit threshold this year. So we're going to take a look at that. And then close it down, we're going to talk about the latest with former Alabama guard J.D. Davison, unfortunately being released by the Celtics this week. A bit of a shocking decision to some people. I think, you know, after looking into it a little bit more, we maybe have a bit of a more clear answer as to why it happened, but we will get to that. Let's start with recruiting, as we always do on this show. Before we do any of that, actually, let me ask Joe, you doing okay today?
Oh man, I'm thrilled. I'm excited to keep it going. Just like you said, we had a great time on my show, and you got a great list of topics, so let's get right into some more fun.
Yeah, like I said, we'll start with the recruiting here. Not a whole lot to get into, but Alabama does land another commitment in the 2026 class this week. 4-star quarterback Taden Kawa from Orem, Utah, originally from Honolulu, Hawaii, transferred into Utah this past season. 6'5", 235 pounds, threw for over 3,000 yards with 28 touchdowns last year. Also added, I believe, somewhere around 320 yards on the ground. Really kind of just curious what this means for the future of the room. Is this you know, an insurance policy for Alabama with who is sitting here thinking, okay, Ty Simpson's our starter this year. We're heading into a situation where after this, we might be looking at Keelan Russell transfer, Austin Mack transfer, whoever it may be transferring. So we've got to get two guys in this year's class. It's unclear what the thought process is here, because I think, Joe, you and I both kind of thought after landing Jet Tamala, all right, that's your quarterback for this class. I didn't necessarily see a second one coming, but you go out and get a relatively talented one, not like a super underrated guy. I don't have his exact 247 page pulled up here, but I mean, he's a 4-star ranked quarterback, so not necessarily a guy that was not wanted by a lot of other programs. He's a number 26 quarterback in the class, so just a bit interesting for Alabama. I'm really just curious to see what this means for the future of this quarterback room.
Yeah, I mean, I think that he looks like a quarterback that is talented, very talented. I mean, you're not getting a scholarship offer to Alabama if you're not talented. He looks like a talented quarterback, but I wonder if these coaches are just ensuring that Alabama has enough arms in 2026, because mm-hmm. you never know what's going to happen at the end of the year. Obviously, you got three guys in the room right now with Simpson, Russell, and Mack. If Simpson returns, does that mean Mack or Russell are transferring out? If Simpson moves on, is the loser of the Mack Russell quarterback battle going to transfer out again? I think so much is in the air, and I like the Jet Tamala addition earlier in the summer, and I think Taden Kawa falls right in line with, okay, talented guy, mm-hmm. big arm, some just insurance in case things don't play out in the quarterback room the way that the coaching staff wants to in December and January.
Yeah, I think I'm in agreement with you there on that. And this kind of really both of these guys almost being a bit of an insurance policy for kind of just the future of this room, because like you said, after this season, it's a bunch of question marks. You don't really know. We still don't know what we have in Ty Simpson, if we're going to get, you know, first round draft pick level NFL caliber play out of him. Because if we do, that certainly eases things up a little bit. It opens up the room for the two guys that are behind him right now, and then so on and so forth, you know, the guys after that. But if that does not happen, I think you got a bit of a logjam in the quarterback room, and then maybe you're looking at a situation where you've got some guys transferring out that you didn't necessarily want to have transfer out. But, you know, regardless, Tayden Kawa, talented player. You know, you can see you see the reasons Alabama wanted to go get this guy when you watch his highlights. You see the big arm. You see the ability to push the ball downfield. Now he is, you know, making a lot of throws on his very first read, it seems, getting the ball out quick and not really necessarily doing a whole lot, reading the defense a whole lot, not really throwing guys open per se. But you do see flashes of it, and I think, you know, like I said, the reasons that Alabama wanted him are pretty clear when you watch his highlights.
Yeah, for sure. I think that I wonder if he's too tall.
Yeah, it might be.
But that's not for me. That's not for me to say.
That's my growing concern with Austin Mack. You know, I jumped into the Austin Mack camp so quickly when he transferred to Alabama, being such a physically impressive prospect, but you do kind of, there is a sweet spot with quarterback where you can be too tall, and that 6'5 range is pushing it.
Yeah, I think that this kid has a lot of tools that you see in the passing game. And did you already mention transferring from Hawaii to Utah? Yeah. and playing for a bit? I think playing for a bigger school in Utah.
Yeah, that's what it seems like. I think I was checking the Max Preps, like Utah State high school football rankings, and I think Orem was either 10th or 11th in the entire state. So, you know, one of the top high school football programs in the state of Utah. Now, say what you will about Utah high school football, but he's at the best level he could be.
So it's a good get for Alabama, and I think that it continues to solidify a pretty strong recruiting class that's coming together pretty nicely.
Yep. And then you are still awaiting a commitment from Tank Jones, the five-star edge rusher from Alabama, excuse me. Seen this morning that is probably down to Texas A&M, Oregon, and Alabama. I don't know that that means good things for the Crimson Tide. I don't know. I have not had the opportunity to speak with Mr. Tank Jones. Have not had the opportunity to talk to anybody in or around his, you know, his camp or his recruitment. So I don't know where his loyalties lie, but I do not believe Alabama can compete monetarily with those two programs if it does come down to that. So that could be a bit of an unfortunate spot for the Crimson Tide. But, you know, being a guy from Alabama, hopefully that maybe gets him a bit of a discount here.
A bit of a discount. Hopefully, I mean, maybe Mama's in his ear saying, you know, stay close, stay close. Bit of a discount. Hopefully, if the edge rusher, if you get better production out of the Wolf Room this year, maybe that will also help.
Sure.
Help him think, oh, this is a place I can develop. Because Quay was good last year. Good, was good for a first year starter. Could have been better. Yeah. Obviously, but if he takes a huge step forward, maybe Tank Jones sees, oh, I can make decent money. I can stay close to home, and I can get nicely developed for the NFL.
Well, that kind of takes us perfectly into one of the other topics I wanted to get into today, mentioning Katie Windham's story that she wrote for Alabama Crimson Tide on SI, Bama Central. I think it was yesterday she put it out, basically posing the question, is Alabama going to have a player get double-digit sacks this year? You look at the guys who were your main producers on defense last year. I think the obvious candidate that you can point to for this season is LT Overton, but he only had 2 sacks last year. Wasn't really able to convert a lot. He had 39 pressures, which is amazing and awesome, but wasn't really able to convert a lot of those into sacks. You know, I wonder if maybe hopefully he got with Jalen Milroe this offseason and learned how to make his hands like 2 or 3 inches longer, and then that's what the difference will be.
He needs to get spray some stickum on his gloves.
There we go. That'd be good.
The only problem is he doesn't want it to stick to the offensive lineman. He wants it to stick to the quarterback. He needs to have some stickum in his back pocket, and when he gets around the tackle, sprays that glove up and gotcha, Velcro.
That's what we need. I mean, two sacks for LT Overton in 2024. Like I said, I think he is your most obvious candidate if there was going to be someone to get to double-digit sacks. I just don't know that – I don't feel confident really saying that one player is going to do it. Deontay Lawson, Tim Keenan, Justin Jefferson also had two sacks last year. James Smith had one sack, four tackles for loss last year. I just don't really, if I was a betting man, I don't know that I'm putting money on Alabama getting having a double-digit sack getter this year.
That's what I said yesterday on our little video. I think LT will get six or seven. I think Quay will get four.
Yeah.
I think James Smith will get probably four, five, six. I think Tim Keenan will get two or three, mm-hmm.
You're going to have like three or four guys right in that like 5 to 8 range.
Yeah, right.
And nobody will get to 10.
But even if you do have three, four, five guys in that range, you've improved your numbers from last year.
Significantly.
Last year was not that good.
You did not have many sacks. I don't remember what the exact number was. It was like... Was it like 25 or something? Like it was pretty bad last year. I've got, let's see, 1, 2, 3. It was not many sacks. I think like we just said, if you have three or four guys who are getting 4, 5, 6, 7 sacks, you're improving over last year, and that's all you're really looking for.
25 even.
Okay, total. So it was 25. That's bad. That's pretty bad.
Yeah, you had James Smith with one, Latham with one, Rousseau with just one. Yeah.
I mean, I think you've got to get at least 35 this year as a unit.
Yes. LT with just two, not good. I mean, Tim Keenan, 2.5, but you're playing out of the nose. That's not awful. Really, you want him close to 4.
Sure. Yeah, I think I just think you have to get a lot of these guys to convert, figure out a way for a lot of these guys to convert pressures into sacks. I think, we mentioned LT Overton with 39 pressures last season. It's just... just unfortunate that you could only turn two of those into sacks. I don't know if it's, it feels like it's, I don't want to say it's a skill issue because I think he's a very good player. I think LT Overton, I don't think I'm in a position to call it a skill issue with LT Overton, but it just looked like at times it was just, he's right there. If he could just be a half step faster, a half step quicker, whatever it was, he could be there for the sack. He just wasn't able to do it. So hopefully we see that this year. But yeah, like I said, I don't feel confident that you have a guy with 10 plus sacks this year. I think we're probably looking at a situation where it's three or four guys with, 5 to 8, like we said. But again, that is still an improvement. I want to go back to SEC Media Days and look at the preseason SEC voting. And look, it's no shock that Texas was ranked first, I think. Me and you both have talked about Texas and kind of being the favorite to win the SEC in a lot of people's eyes for several months now. I do think that, and while this should not necessarily be the case, I think this is going to be the case. This is putting a lot of pressure on Arch Manning, a lot of undue pressure on Arch Manning that I don't think necessarily needs to be there. Like if you look at this Texas football team, we've talked about them. You go back to our Know Your Enemy segment from your show however many weeks ago now. This is a damn good football team. You bring back, 6 starters on defense. Offense doesn't really have to be world beaters here. You bring back one of the best defenses in the country potentially. I think it's strangely feels like a kind of a perfect storm for Steve Sarkisian to have a lot of success here, where it's like, okay, you can kind of almost take your hands off and let the defense just play because they are so good. And oh, you need to get in your bag a little bit on this offense. Go ahead, buddy. You don't got to worry about nothing else. I think this, people are going to put these expectations. Oh, Arch Manning is going to lead Texas to whatever, whatever, when it really might be the defense leading them there. And it's a little unfair to Arch.
Yeah, a little unfair to Arch, but you signed up for it when you went to Texas.
This is also fair.
Like, yeah, you didn't go to Tennessee.
Yeah.
You didn't go to Ole Miss like your uncles. You signed up for it when you went to Texas.
That's fair.
Big box, big brand, one of the blue bloods. We can argue that all you want. But you went to Texas. You signed up for pressure.
Yeah. Pressure that is...
His first interception, people are going to go nuts.
I mean, they're going to call for his head if he plays one bad game this year. But, you know, I don't know. Like I said, Texas is a very good football team outside of Arch Manning. You know, you're really, really good on the defensive side of the ball. I think that's going to be what is carrying this Texas team to some victories. And then it is going to be, oh, we're getting some – Arch Manning's finally comfortable now, week 5-6. He looks really good now. You know, I don't know. That Texas getting the – you know, like I said, it's not necessarily surprising, but – I think people are forgetting about the team that they put in second place a bit, the Georgia Bulldogs, who still run the SEC, remind you. Just because they lost to Notre Dame does not mean that Georgia is soft. It was a good Notre Dame team. I think this is a very good Georgia team. I think they're kind of in a similar situation to Texas, not necessarily with the talent at the quarterback position, but just having a strong defense where the offense doesn't necessarily have to be world beaters. I don't know. I feel good about this year's Georgia team. I think they're a good football team. Zachariah Branch, you bring in, obviously, is going to cover up a lot of inefficiencies on offense, which is how talented of a player he is. You have two really solid tight end options. You got really good running back in Nate Frazier. I know they're in. I know, you know, people picked them second, but like, are people sleeping on Georgia still?
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Well, the defense has a lot of youth to it. That's part of it. That's part of the sleeping. But the, I mean, talent is still very, very high. I think you get Zachariah Branch, and he's going to make Gunnar Stockton look good.
I think so too. Has Georgia? Have they? You know, because with Alabama throughout the Nick Saban years, you know, after a few years there, it felt like, regardless of the experience level on the team, it was, oh, we all know these are really good players because Nick Saban recruited them. So we know Alabama's defense. You know, you lost four or five guys to the draft. Doesn't matter. Alabama's still going to have one of the best defenses in the, you know, whatever. Has Georgia kind of earned that that aura about them already?
Yeah,
I think they have to,
for sure.
I think that they are in a situation where, kind of regardless of the freshman, sophomore, junior, senior you see on the field there, it's like, oh, we know these guys are at Georgia. So there's a reason they're here. They're probably good, really good defensive football players. Alabama comes in at third in the list with 29 votes. I think it's a fair spot for Alabama. Honestly, I was a little surprised to see them this high. I kind of thought maybe they'd be below LSU. Feels like the hype train for LSU is speeding up faster and faster as we get closer to the season. But I'm not necessarily surprised to see Alabama here at three. I definitely wouldn't have expected them to go over Georgia or Texas. So this seems pretty perfectly fair for the Crimson Tide.
Yeah, I think that Alabama, last year, I think last year cast a lot of doubt on this coaching staff losing to Vanderbilt and Oklahoma. And you look at the road schedule this year, and it's not friendly. Yeah. And so I do think the talent is just as good or maybe even slightly better. And I think the quarterback is going to at least fit the system better. But I think the doubt is going to be, you know, people just need to see it. People people have a hard time projecting anything other than what they've already seen.
You mentioned the talent level, and that's kind of where I want to go next. You had 11 preseason All-SEC selections on this year's between the three teams. I think that was tied for the most of anybody in the SEC. I think it was, I want to say, I was reading our friend Hunter DeSiver's article, and I think he said Texas and Georgia were the other two with 11 selections there. I mean, not a lot of complaints from me here. Caden Proctor, Ryan Williams on your first team, have no qualms there. I think both those players are deserving of that spot. I don't necessarily think any of the other guys on the first team were bad selections. I think just about everybody there deserved to be there. Second team, you get Jaden Roberts, great. Parker Brailsford, he's maybe one guy that I feel could move up to the first team. but we're splitting hairs here. Tim Keenan, LT Overton, Deontay Lawson, and then Damani Jackson, which I guess people are just... I just have to accept that people are low on Damani Jackson when I am not. It just is what it is, I guess. I was running through, looking through the Twitter machine last night, just finding various PFF tweets throughout the year of Damani Jackson coverage stats. Like, the guy was incredible last year. Just give him his flowers. Third team, you get Jam Miller, Bray Hubbard, Keon Sabb. Fine with me. I expect big year from Bray Hubbard. I think a lot of people expect a big year from Bray Hubbard. He did some good things last year, you know, being that guy that kind of came out of nowhere and started making plays for Alabama. So I expect him to have a good season. One major snub, though, for me that I am, like, almost really angry about. Jeremy Bernard. Why is he not on any of these teams? 50 catches, 794 yards, 2 touchdowns in 2024. Bernard belongs over Aaron Anderson, who is on the second team. He belongs over Eric Singleton, who's on the third team.
Yes. That had
for the exact same stat line in 2024 in the ACC. He belongs over Ryan Wingo, who made the second team, who had 400 yards and 2 touchdowns last year. I don't understand what we're doing here. Jeremy Bernard was great. Why do we not expect him to take a step forward with a more competent quarterback that can deliver him the ball more efficiently? Very strange. I cannot understand the thought process of leaving Jeremy Bernard off of any of these teams. I'm not saying he's a first team guy, but third team, absolutely.
I think Jeremy was victim of what happens at SEC Media Days. It's, well, I picked one from Alabama, then the other 5 selections need to be from 5 other schools.
So.
And, of course, I'm picking Ryan Williams, despite Jeremy having a more statistic, it was better than Ryan's season, right? Not looking at it right off the top of my head, but I'm pretty sure there's more receptions. Maybe it wasn't more touchdowns, because I think Ryan had 8. But you just fall victim to... Well, I already voted for one from Alabama. I can't vote for another one from Alabama. I got to spread the love out to the other schools. Get all the other schools wide receiver ones.
Yeah.
They're foolish. When I voted Ryan 1, Cam Coleman 2. I think I voted Jeremy 5 because I think you get 6 selections. I voted in five because I did try to spread the love, but I think I voted in 5 or 6. I mean, he might have been my last one in there. But I think that he's going to be more effective this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think I expect the same thing from him. I don't remember when we were talking about it. It's been probably a couple weeks now, but kind of just talking about these receivers and the impact they're going to have. And I think me and you both kind of came to an agreement that, like, we could very likely see Jeremy Bernard have another season where he's the most successful or most impactful receiver on the team, whereas Ryan Williams might have some big plays here and there and be the big face, whatever. Your true wide receiver 1 might wind up being Jeremy Bernard.
Right. I think that he might be the guy that you're just relying on to move the chains. And Isaiah, too. But then you're going to just, here's your backbreaker play to Ryan Williams.
Yeah. So that was a huge snub for me. I don't know that there was really any other ones I was upset about. Not that I could think of, at least looking at the list. I felt pretty good about the way the rest of them shook out. Like I said, you know, would have maybe liked to see Parker Brailsford get the nod for first team. I think he is a first team caliber center. But, you know, it is what it is. Was there anybody that you thought from Alabama deserved to be on any of them that didn't? I couldn't really. Jeremy was really the only glaring one to me.
Well, I'm with you that Damani should have been higher, but Damani falls victim to other defensive backs being star names.
John Abern.
My biggest surprise when I saw that list was not the Alabama players that weren't on the list. It was Jam Miller being on it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. I'd probably, if you would ask me to vote myself, I don't know that I would have necessarily had him there.
No, you got 6 running back picks, and I didn't even feel bad that I wasn't including him. I didn't include him. I probably would not have even had him 7th.
Yeah.
As my next man off. I went with, you know, Caden Durham. I went with Jaden Ball. I went with Le'Veon Moss, Nate Frazier. I went with Jaden Ott. There's 5. I can't remember who the rest of them, but like.
You think this was just a case of people seeing senior beside his name
and saying, Alabama.
Yeah.
Senior Alabama running back. Got to vote for him.
Yeah. You're probably right there.
Amon Hardy from Missouri, probably going to be a better pick.
There's going to be a lot of really good running backs in the SEC this year.
Oh, yes.
a lot of really good running backs this year. And Alabama, you know, I hate to say it, where we stand right now, you are not in the like upper tier of those running backs in the SEC. You got some good guys, don't get me wrong, but you're not in that, you know, A tier, S tier of the SEC running backs here. I think that was the last thing I had from media days. Unless there was anything else that I missed that you wanted to that jumped out from you, or jumped out to you that I didn't talk there, that we didn't get the chance to talk about over the last week or so.
The other big thing from those from that voting is that Ty Simpson wasn't even an option. You could not select, like, not that he didn't make a team.
Sure.
You could not vote for him on the ballot. They had all the quarterbacks.
They had guys that had started before or something.
Started, or I think, like,
or Arch Manning.
Heavily declared a starter already.
Yeah.
And, like, he is the starter, but they've been kind of it's been a soft launch.
If you know, you know.
Right.
You know, but to those who are not in the know, I guess, they're still.
And so they didn't even have him as an option. And so that was like, because I might have put him third just for the heck of it, just to like get him a vote, but not even a choice.
That's interesting. That is interesting. You know, I've said, you've all heard me talk about Ty Simpson. I'm not overly excited about what he brings to the table this season, but I still hope he has a great year, and I'm expecting him to have a good year.
And you should have him as an option, right?
Yeah, you absolutely should. He's going to be the starter. We all know this.
The balloting system is messed up because all the corners and safeties are in one category.
Yeah, that's
and
weird.
So and you get to pick like six or eight. I think it was eight. And so it's like, well, do I pick four corners and four safeties? Well, of course, that's why Damani falls off a little bit because, you know, people probably have him as their fifth corner. The average reporter, I probably had him as my first or second.
Yeah.
And, oh, do I pick Keon Sabb and Bray Hubbard? Is he the fourth best safety, fifth best safety? Is he the first? Like, how do I delineate that? And they also had all the edge rushers and all the defensive tackles in the same category.
So we need a rehaul or an overhaul on the way this voting is done.
Yes.
Need some ball knowers to get there in Atlanta and make this happen. That's all I have for media days. We'll move now to the last story that I've got really for us. A bit of basketball news. You heard me mention it earlier. J.D. Davison released by the Boston Celtics this week, last night. Thank you. Our friend Hunter DeSiver writing it for Bama Central, Alabama Crimson Tide on SI. And to me, like, this is just, I don't know if this is a commentary on the state of the NBA or if it's nothing like that at all and it is purely just a financial thing, which I'm kind of leaning towards that explanation. But it's a bit sad that this is what G League MVP gets you. You know, he wins the G League or is named G League MVP in April of this year. The Celtics pick up his team option on June 29th, like less than a month ago. And then now here we are, and J.D. Davison is cut. After some digging, like I said, I am leaning more towards maybe this just being kind of a basic, hey, buddy, it's a business. We got to save some money here kind of move. I don't really think that it has anything to do with J.D. Davison as a player. Because this cutting J.D. Davison saved the Celtics enough money to get them under the second apron, which I have now learned is the way that the NBA does their salary cap. They have two aprons where you get the first apron, and then if you go over the second apron, you get extra penalties, all this kind of stuff. So the Celtics now have, you know, gotten themselves essentially back under the salary cap, for lack of a better term, with the waiving of J.D. Davison. 25.6 points, 5.1 rebounds, 7.1 assists, and 1.4 steals. In 45 games last year for the Maine Celtics, appeared in 16 games for the Boston Celtics, four appearances in the playoffs. I would have to imagine there's a spot on an NBA team for the G League MVP, but genuinely, it's kind of hard to tell where he's going to wind up.
Because, Charlotte.
Yeah, that's sure. That'd be cool. Let him back up LaMelo.
Charlotte with it'll be JD, it'll be Colin Sexton, it'll be Brandon Miller.
Oh, yeah,
all Brad we got to do is trade for Herb Jones.
Yeah, we got to get Herb there
and
too.
Get Keon Ellis over there.
Is Dante Hall out there somewhere in one of these leagues
Europe,
still?
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, we'll have more updates with JD Davison, I'm sure, relatively soon. I would have to imagine he lands with some team. Like I said, he is a talented player and he showed it in the G League there. But Celtics just had to make a money move, it would appear. So it's unfortunate for him. Weird that he was strange that he's the guy that gets cut. Like, you have a G League MVP on your team. Surely you could have cut other guys to save this money, but whatever. I was hoping he would maybe get a bit more run this next season too, especially just kind of considering the Celtics situation with the Jason Tatum injury. They're probably not really going to be competing for much next year, so maybe he would have gotten a lot of time, but oh well. That's I think that's really all I have for today. A little bit of a short show on this one, but yeah, we will be back next week with another edition of the All Things Bama podcast. Make sure you like and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you get your podcast from. Leave us a 5-star rating. Make sure you follow both Joe and myself on Twitter at MAWoods_ and at JoeGaither6. And like I said, we'll be back next week with another edition of the All Things Bama podcast.
KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.